I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Josh Watham. He is a former Green Beret. He is currently the Chief Operating Officer of Triad InfoSec. It's a veteran-owned cybersecurity business. He's also the owner of Duke's Fortis Consulting, and he's on the board of advisors for Owners in Honor. Obviously, Josh focuses a lot on veterans and veteran-owned businesses. And we're going to be talking about something that, you know, Josh and I were just talking about in the green room. So many small businesses feel like they're not a target of cyber attacks. You know, that's not something they have to worry about. That's something the big businesses have to worry about. And it's just not true. And the challenge is getting the message out there in a way that's not just fear-based, but it's a reality. So if you own a business or you're in a senior role in the business, listen into this because you are a target, probably more so than you realize. So Josh, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. You know, and we were talking about it. It's so hard, at least from my experience, it's so hard to sell anything in the cybersecurity space because it feels like you have to really scare people.
Yeah. People don't move unless there's pain. I think that's true. Even if that's pain from a friend or a personal situation, it's really what gets people to move in a direction. And cybersecurity is often viewed as just strictly a call center. So that makes it rough, right? People are trying to grow their revenue and increase their profits, and looking at more expenses for resilience can be a hard decision to make.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's the wrong one, but it's got to be a budget-focused conversation to make sure it's affordable.
You know, and I've done some work in this area, and I've sat in a room with a major insurer with my client that was a broker and listened to some of the stories. You know, and I heard stories about like a food truck that had a cybersecurity breach. I heard about a dry cleaner, not a big chain of dry cleaners, just a dry cleaner that got ransomed. And if you think about it, you have like 1,000 garments on the rack somewhere. You have no idea where they are because all the information's in the computer. And if you're going to get your customers their garments, you got to do something. You got to, you know, pay the ransom. I don't know. What do you do in that situation? If you were advising that dry cleaner that just got ransomed and people need to pick up their garments, what would be your advice?
Well, for that particular situation, hopefully they have some sort of backup system. Hopefully their data is stored as a non-network location to where they can reboot a laptop and at least understand where everything's at. They've got a written incident response plan. First question we always ask is, do you have insurance? Coincidentally enough, it's kind of chicken and the egg with cyber insurance and the rise in ransomware. Insurance is essentially the venture capital arm of hackers, because 20 years ago, a hacker would come in and ask for $5,000 and be hopeful that they would get it. Now they can come in and ask for $500,000 because they're banking that you have an insurance policy that's going to pay them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the hard part of the retroactive fix, is it's 10x what it'll cost you if you do it proactively. Because of the ransomware, the issue that you've been breached, so the premiums that you're, you know, the hike in the premiums you're going to get to now get insurance, all of the stuff to actually fix it, do forensics if that's what you want to do, And then to put everything in place for resilient posture, it can be a really big lift. So having an insurance policy, having a little bit of cash reserves, having some solid backup plans, it's security 101. It's just in a digital environment.
Yeah. And one of the things I heard that just really helped me understand why it's so prevalent. There are like software development centers. These aren't like some hacker with greasy hair in his basement who's writing this ransomware. These are actually companies with teams of developers, and they essentially sell. They have like an affiliate program where they provide their ransomware for the guy in the basement to penetrate the system, and when they pay the ransom, they just get a cut of the action.
Yeah, I would say it's even more involved than that, where it's a full enterprise in other countries. I don't know of any country that's extradited one of their citizens because they hacked a foreign company.
Wow.
And so with the anonymity there, and there are certain countries that we're not too friendly with, and it's an economic warfare. So they are incentivized to have this activity happen. So I think instead of guy in a hoodie in his mom's basement, it's 15-story building, fully staffed. This is how they make their money. It's a multi-billion dollar, if not a trillion dollar industry, because it's just the new wave of theft. No longer do you have to physically break in to get anything, have your face on a camera. You can go in through the back door, and all you got to do is get somebody to. They don't even need to click a link anymore. There's websites where it's called drive-by attack. If you just visit that website by putting that URL in, they're in your system. You've really got to be careful and deliberate about what you're doing. And deliberate is the key to security. That pace, is what makes all the difference.
One of the emails, I'm sure you've gotten these emails. I used to get them before, but I'd get this email saying, "Oh, you don't know this, but we hacked into your system, gained access to your camera, and we caught you doing naughty things. And if you don't send us this much Bitcoin, then we're going to expose you." And the funniest one I got was I had one come through like November, December of 2021, and it said, "Oh, we hacked into your system in October of 21 and we caught you doing naughty things." I was in the hospital then, learning how to walk again. I was like, I didn't even have the strength to do naughty things. I wish I did.
Yeah, they'll say anything. And I think a misconception is that a hacker will get into your system and immediately attack. And it's more of a recon and raid strategy. So a real attack is perfectly timed because they've been in your system for 6 months, read all your emails, understand your habits, understand who talks to you. And so then you take AI as a tool to make sure there's no grammatical errors, do deep research on who they're pretending to be, and all of a sudden the phishing attack is extremely sophisticated. You get an email from your boss, trust, but verify.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone and call, or send an email back to them.
Well, that was the case with the SolarWinds attack. And I mean, they had been in the system for months and months and months. I mean, how long was it from the time they gained access to the time it was discovered?
Oh, I don't know for sure, but that's pretty typical. I think the average is sitting between 140 and 190 days in a system, depending on which statistical report you read. I mean, it's quite a while.
So what's that mean in terms of backup strategy? If they're in there for, at least 6 months before you realize they're in there, how do you do backups there? Kind of like in the case of that dry cleaner, how do you have a backup that's relevant if you do get ransomed?
Yeah, you got to back it up to something that's not connected to the network. And the key is to constantly scan. So there's different tools out there where we can, you can do a vulnerability scan to test and see where likely breaches would occur. You can do a penetration test, which is essentially hiring white hat hackers to come in and breach your system. That's more preventative. Then they have things called a tool called a SIEM. Best way for me to understand this is if you look at your business like a garden, a vulnerability scan will look at which gates are unlocked, which fence is too low, can we dig underneath the fence, things like that. Whereas a SIEM will look at the microscopic level of every blade of grass and every leaf inside the garden that is your business. And if there is a bug or a piece of fungus or something dying or a weed, it'll throw up an alert so that you could check that and see if it's actually a bad actor inside the system.
Yeah.
It's that type of tracking that you got to have. And there's different ways to back up your information so that it goes through filters and lands offsite. But even then, if you throw stuff into a backup and an external hard drive and unplug it, if you experience a breach, that needs to be scanned before it gets plugged back in to make sure that it wasn't loaded with some sort of encryption or, time delay device.
That makes sense. So you were telling me the one of the saddest moments in operations is when you get a phone call. You get a phone call and you realize that the problem's bigger than they know it.
Yeah, it's the, small businesses, especially when they've been around for 10 years, they're making $10, $15 million a year. We'll get calls every once in a while to see if we can help because we're kind of like a general for hire. So we've got different spec ops teams and armies that we can reach out to for different things that you need. And we'll sit on some of these calls and, company just got locked out of their system. They don't have insurance. They don't know what they can access because if they open the door, it might get worse. And so typically on those calls, we're going through the motions of let's help, let's give you the resources. But I know that if you don't have insurance and you have a $500,000 ransom and your whole network's compromised, you're looking at $1 million lift and you're probably going under. And it's heartbreaking to sit on a call like that and see the franticness and kind of know that this is probably not going to work out. You're probably going to have to close your business and just sell your assets. And, inevitably 3 or 4 days later, that tends to be the conversation is how do we go about shutting this thing down? And it's
Wow.
sad. It's really sad. Running a business is hard and it turns into your life's work. I'm a military guy and been through a lot, but it's still like, man, it'll make you want to cry when you see somebody suffering like that. It's like seeing somebody on the battlefield that is bleeding out and they don't know yet that it's over. It's rough.
Wow. Wow. What a picture. Huh. So, what, I guess one question I have, I mean, and maybe this is wrong think on my part, but my guess is it's impossible to build a system that's, that can never be penetrated, that it's just, there's just too much creativity, there's too much influx. And so what's the, is there a mindset of, okay, we know we'll, we know we'll be penetrated, and here's our plan for when that happens, or is it more of a plan of, let's just make sure we're never penetrated? How do you guys approach that?
Yeah, you're right. There is no 100% resiliency. So the overall strategy, regardless of company size or industry, is reduce the risk as much as tolerable for the budget. And then you take the remaining risk and try and compartmentalize it as much as possible so that you're working in some sort of different access levels, right? Rings of protection. And then you take all that remaining risk and you offload it to the insurance policy. That well covers that. And it should cover not only the cost of the ransomware. It should cover the cost of the forensics. It should cover the cost of the rebuild. It should cover the cost of brand management, because you may have to notify your clients or your end users that their data was breached. And so all of that marketing effort should be covered under the insurance policy as well. And so it's a question of risk reduction versus transferring that risk to a policy. And it's an ongoing effort to not only make sure the resiliency works, but to improve it, and then to continually have conversations with your insurance provider about the underwriting for your business and say, if we can do X, Y, and Z beyond the minimum requirements, what does that do to our premiums? So now you're able to have a board-worthy conversation about the resiliency that you're trying to put in place.
Yeah. So what about, you know, there's a concept I call it the padlock you put on the shed in the back. Yeah, you know, those locks are easily penetrated. I mean, but they stop most people. And is there a concept there where, you know, maybe the goal is just to be harder to penetrate than somebody down the street, you know, somebody who left the shed open versus somebody who put a padlock on the shed? The criminal's going to go to the shed that's open. Is there that concept in cybersecurity?
Yeah, kind of. The bad actors are scanning all the businesses all the time, right? Trying to figure out how to get in. The scalability is crazy. So you've got to understand that they can check tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of locks simultaneously. So really the lock in this case is the infrastructure that we put in place. And then the weakest link part of this is the people.
Mm-hmm.
So if the network is pretty secure, the easiest way to get in is to socially engineer somebody in the company to have them grant you access. So that's the weakest link. I would say, again, it depends on what you read, but 80 to 90% of breaches are caused by a human from inside the company.
I've seen a list before of the most popular passwords they're used. I mean, it's shocking. What are some of the ones that you've seen? I'm sure you've seen the same list.
Oh, well, you know, password is the most commonly breached password, I would say, because it's, you know, or some variation of that, right? A lot of people don't even change the stock password, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, if you get a security panel done at your house for an alarm system, the stock password's usually 123456.
Yeah.
There's tons of people that don't change it. And then just weak passwords. A brute force attack is essentially taking a computer to try every single password over and over and over again. So if your password is 6 characters without a whole lot of variance, it doesn't take that long for a big computer to crack that thing. That's yeah. Why they recommend, you know, 20 characters with every single variation that you can possibly use at random, because then it becomes a time problem to where it's going to take years and years and years to break that password. So if the password is complex enough to where it'll take 2 years to break it, and you change that password every 6 months, then the statistical likelihood that that's going to be broken from a brute force attack is really, really low.
How about if you have a really good password that's a strong password, should you use that across all of your different logins?
No, because one password breach means now I have access to everything. That's where the compartmentalization, that's one step in compartmentalization, is if I've got a different complex password for every single thing I log into, then there is no, you know, going from one system to the next if it requires a login every time. And that's where password managers make this actually achievable, right? Because you've got one password manager with a master password. You attach that to everything you got, and it opens everything up based on the difference in passwords. And it'll auto-generate those and save them for you. And then you just rotate your master password, make sure it's written down on a piece of paper somewhere that's locked on a postal code stuck to your computer or on your desk.
You know, One of the things I ran into, so I've been using a password manager for, I think I started using it in 2016. And you know, the for me, it was I had a client that asked us about what our security measures were. And I was like, you know, and I had a spreadsheet on the network drive with our passwords. And so I went over and I started using one of the password managers. And I thought I'd done everything right. I had a family member that had access to, you know, had admin access to that and could access all the passwords. And I told him, I said, hey, you know, just so you have this. And it required him to sign in and what have you. Well, when I went in my coma in 2021, he forgot about that. And so all of a sudden that broke down and he didn't know how to do it. He managed to find that old spreadsheet that I had on the network, and it's still there were a couple passwords that were still valid. And he used, you know, he was able to use that to log into a few things. But for me, it was a real wake-up call. And I've since taken some measures to overcome that point of weakness.
Yeah, I mean, that's the you can't beat write it down, put it in the fireproof safe, right? Because then it's if something happens on the person that knows where the key is that you trust can go in and grab that thing and then and get access, right? Or you know, the worst comes to worst, your spouse has to grab it because you're no longer here. She can get access to everything, especially, you know. Everything's in there, right? For all banking information and financial information. How are you going to sell a company if you don't have access? And if they're not written in on the bank account and you're not there to co-sign, like now you've got everything goes into probate. You're going to wait forever and the business is going to die down and it's not going to be worth like business resiliency doesn't stop with cyber. It goes into everything you plan for so that you can, you know, turn on a dime. That's what makes it really wealth management as opposed to just right now money creation.
Well, I think one thing that people don't realize, and there's somebody in my life that I keep saying, please don't use the same password, you know, everywhere, because what people don't realize is they'll hack some system where you have that password on that, and then it's real easy. They're just like, well, I wonder where they bank. Well, how many banks are there in the US? You know, and you just go in and you start taking their email and that password. Next thing you know, you're in their bank account.
Yeah, I mean the worst is people using the Google Chrome to save everything because it's in your browser. All I got to do is get into your Gmail and I've got everything. Not only do I have all of your passwords, but more than likely 90% of your multi-factor authentication is going into your email. So when I go to log in, if it sends me a push notification, it's going to go straight to your Gmail and I'm going to get that 6-digit code to put in and everything. Right. So again, compartmentalize those efforts. Have your stuff go directly to your cell phone. Have a password manager that's encrypted, that's separate from everything else. Don't save stuff in your browser. You know, I have some notifications that'll go to one email, some that'll go to a different, some that'll go to apps on my phone, some that'll send me text messages, just so it's not the same across the board. And it's all pretty easy, right? Anytime you get one of those notifications, it's going to say, I sent this to this. So I don't have to remember because my brain is not good enough these days to remember all that stuff, but I can set it up so that it helps me out and stay secure.
You mentioned that the people are always the weakest link. What would you tell business owners that they need to do to make sure that their people aren't the link that gets them hacked?
Be involved with the policy that would help you build. Lead from the front and actually do what the policy says, and then enforce that down the pipeline. It's not a question of, you know, you don't say, please do this. No, you need to do your training so that you're aware. You need to accept responsibility for your own actions. And I realize that, you know, working a password manager and doing multi-factor authentication and going through those classes, it's not the funnest stuff in the world by any means, but it's necessary in order to make sure that you keep your job. You're working 8 to 12 hours a day to make sure you keep your job and advance your career. Spend 30 seconds when you need to make sure that it's secure.
Well, that's really cool. Well, Josh, this has been interesting, and it's what piece of advice would you give, if you were to summarize, let's say, three top things that somebody listening should focus on, what would be those three things?
Don't wait. It is so much more cost effective to be proactive and preventative than it is to be reactive in these types of situations. It's that old medical adage of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of treatment. The same is true here. Get an insurance. Make sure that your insurance is enough. The average breach cost is between 1.5 and $4.5 million, depending on what you read. So a $30,000 supplement is not going to save your business. It needs to be real. And if you don't know how to do that, contact an expert, right? There is, do the DIY, get your password manager, set up multi-factor authentication, educate yourself. Like, those are all important. But if you can afford it, call a pro, and at least buy a consulting session to go over what the plan should be so that you can work on it on your own. And if you're in a big enough business to where you can afford it, outsource some expert help. It's what you do with your CPA. It's what you do with some of your marketing, right? Like, why wouldn't you outsource the livelihood, protecting the livelihood that you've spent a lifetime creating with an expert?
Yeah. No, that's great. And I mean, your story about you get on the phone with somebody and you realize that they're going to be closing their business in 3 or 4 days and they haven't yet realized that. That's a sadness that I think everybody wants to avoid.
Yeah, and that happens. I think the number is 44% of people with insurance will not get paid because they said yes to all the things that the questionnaire asked, and nobody made sure that that was being done. So they get breached, and they're expecting insurance to pay out. And so there's a longer lead time on the businesses closing, but you're probably still closing.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, Josh, how can the folks reach you?
Triadinfosec.io is our website. There's a contact us page there. If you got any questions about that, I'm all over LinkedIn. So LinkedIn/Joshua Wathan. Feel free to connect and send me a message directly. I'm happy to help in the way I can.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.